Hi. Oh, there we go. Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us today for The Culture of Tech, How Women Are Changing the Rules. I'm Emily Ramshaw. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Texas Tribune, which is a seven-year-old digital news operation. We put big data and technology at the center of our nonpartisan news. It is really a critical time for us to be having this conversation because, put bluntly, there are simply not enough women changing the rules. It's a problem from the bottom to the top. Women receive just 18% of undergraduate computer science degrees. They hold 26% of the computing jobs, though. They also account for just 5% of leadership positions in the tech industry. This problem is only exacerbated among women of color. If current projections hold in this country, there will be 1.4 million jobs in computer science in the United States by 2020, yet just 3% of them will be filled by women. That's despite the fact that these jobs offer some of the largest salaries in the marketplace, which is really, frankly, inexcusable. To understand why and to talk about how we change it, I'm joined by three remarkable women in technology, women who are realists about the current prognosis, but also really optimistic about the future. On my immediate right, Tamara Fields is a managing director at Accenture, where she is the client account lead for the Texas State Comptroller and the program manager for the state's massive payroll and personnel system. In 18 years at Accenture, Tamara has supported large, complex federal financial and procurement systems, as well as supporting the Department of Defense. She is the diversity and inclusion lead for the Austin Accenture office. Gina Helfrich is an expert in women's leadership and gender equity and was the co-founder and CEO of RecruitHer, a woman-owned recruiting and consulting firm committed to making the tech industry more inclusive. She is the former director of the Harvard College Women's Center and the founder of Feminist Hack ATX, which works toward a more woman-friendly Austin tech scene. And finally, Carla Pinheiro-Sublett is a senior vice president and chief marketing officer at Rackspace, a managed cloud company. Previously, she was chief marketing officer of the Rackspace Americas region and executive director of marketing for Dell Latin America, where she was named one of the top 50 influential Hispanics by HispanicBusiness.com. So please help me in welcoming these wonderful panelists. So, by way of introduction, I'm hoping all three of you can share a moment where you changed the rules, a time you pushed the boundaries of women in technology. Give us your personal experiences in this realm, and whichever one of you wants to kick off, go for it. Tamara, what about you?
Sure. So thanks, everyone, for being here today. I'm very excited to be here and amongst this panel. I'm a huge advocate of this conference, and I'm very excited to be here this morning. This is an interesting topic for me and one that I'm very passionate about and one that's really grown in my life in the last couple of years. I'm very focused about how we expand women, not only in the technology field, but in leadership. And I think that comes primarily from my own story and really just kind of understanding my own path. I will freely admit that I did not initially plan a career in technology. I did graduate from UT Austin, for all the UT grads in the house, and I graduated with a marketing degree. So it's very, definitive that that was the path I was going to take. And it was actually a friend of mine who signed me up for an interview with Accenture. And so when I accepted and I started with this company, trust me when I tell you I didn't know what I signed up for. And they were like, "Oh, you got to go code." I got to go do what? I was very confused by the process. And but needless to say, I'm very focused on succeeding in anything that I take on. And so I started this career, and it wasn't something that I planned to stay in. I wanted to be a lawyer. I was very definitive that that's what I was going to go do. I was just going to do this for a couple of years and leave. But very quickly, I started to recognize that I had an affinity for this type of work, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed several aspects of it. And so I think a lot of times as women, we get afraid of technology, right? It's not something that we immediately understand, or there's words that we don't immediately understand. We automatically assume that it's not for us, and that's simply not true. And I started to really learn, like anything, you can learn anything, right? You can learn words, you can understand concepts, you can understand logical equations. And so I started to embrace this career. And once I started to do that, I really had to take stock and an assessment of whether or not I felt I could be successful in this field and in this company. And it was challenging. It was challenging at several points in my career. But I think one of those points where I really think I kind of turned it on its ear, I was a senior manager. I had been with the company probably about 8 years at that point, and I was faced with a dilemma on whether or not I was going to leave or whether or not I was going to stay. And it was really around this concept of whether I could make partner, right? Managing director is equivalent to partner. And at the time, I did not feel up to the challenge. And I know for a lot of people who know me personally, that might seem strange, but we all have fears and we all have challenges in our lives. And we all have those things that we think we can do and those things that we can't do. And just like the breakfast and the speaker I heard this morning, sometimes as women, we opt ourselves out of a situation and out of a future because we automatically assume that that path is not for us. And I really had to sit down and think about, could I do this? And interestingly enough, the person who convinced me that I could was a man. And we had a conversation, and I told him about the fact that I was looking at the partnership at that time, and I didn't see any women, let alone a person of color, right? And I just, you know, I very clearly stated to him, I said, I don't understand what my path could be to this level when I don't see anyone that looks like me, and it just seems to me to be an impossible task. And he challenged me. He said, Tamara, are you really going to self-defeat that way and really just determine automatically that you can't make this? Are you a failure? And he started asking me all these questions that kind of made me mad. But anyway, but it was a challenge. And at that point that I made that determination in my head, I was like, oh, yes, I can do this because you're not going to call me a failure. you know, I really started to figure out what did I want to do. And one of the things I had to do that was very hard for me that I think that we as women have to face is I had to make an assessment of our culture. I had to make an assessment of those who are in power. And I had to create a strategy and a path to get to know these individuals. And it wasn't something that I really wanted to do because these individuals did not look like me. I automatically assumed these individuals did not have commonalities with me or that we didn't have similar things in common or similar interests. And I found myself to be incorrect. And one of the first times that I went to lunch and with dinner with a couple of these individuals, I was flabbergasted that they were not the enemy that I identified them in my head to be. And I really set about a strategy to get to know all of these individuals. And not all of them turned out well. Right? Some turned out well and some didn't. But it was a learning experience for me. And it really helped me to understand that sometimes you need to be bold. You need to be uncomfortable. And you have to be willing to put yourself out there and know people who may not be automatically individuals that you would choose to associate with outside of work. And when I did that, I really found some really awesome relationships, recognized that I had some prejudgments of my own that I needed to challenge. And as a result of that, created some strong relationships that have been very influential in helping me reach this place in my career. And I'm very happy to say today that I also got a notification on Friday. I just got another promotion. So I'm very excited about that as well. So it's an indication that sometimes you have to challenge yourself to do and go outside the box.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. Gina, tell us about your boundary pushing.
Yes. Is this okay? There we go. All right. Yes. When we launched Recruit Her, it was very clear that we wanted to prioritize the experience of our job seekers and candidates because overwhelmingly it was women and people who are underrepresented in technology. And if we were going to be matching them to roles at companies, we wanted to feel good about the places that we were sending them. So one of the decisions that we made fairly early on, especially when we started getting lots of interest in what we were doing from the company side, was to say, we need to set a bar about who we will take on as clients. And we surveyed our candidate job-seeking community and said, what kind of environment are you looking for? What do you want your future workplace to provide? What kind of benefits do you want them to have? What are the things that are the most important to you when you're looking for a new job? And so we collected that information, and we also looked at, you know, research that's out there. It's available on these things, the type of environments where women and other underrepresented folk do well. And we said, okay, this is a fairly clear picture of what we're looking for. And then any company who came to us, we basically screened for those characteristics. And it's things that seem very obvious, right? Professional development support, the ability to move up in your role, to stick around, real meaningful benefits so that you have flex time and good pay time off and health insurance and no one cares about ping pong tables. So we asked for everyone who was the company who came to us and said, can you help us find talent? We said, we're probably happy to. We'd also like to learn more about what it's like to work for your firm. And so we would ask these series of questions to find out. And whenever we had a potential client to us who just did not meet the bar on a number of these, or there were major concerns that we had about sending people there, we said no. And so to me, that was very much pushing a boundary. There were some very large clients that could have made us a lot of money that we said no to because they had an expose written about the nature of their company culture or something along those lines. So yeah, we'll not name any names. It's not that hard to think through. But it was big, and it was scary to kind of draw a line in the sand that way and hold it, to say we're, you know, two first-time entrepreneurs from Austin, Texas, and we're telling this big multinational company we're not going to recruit for you because we don't believe that you are doing things the way that women and the people who are part of our community demand. So that, to me, that's, you know, a good example.
That's super impressive.
Thanks.
Carla, what about you?
Well, I think my whole career has been defined by not following the rules or not being the conventional candidate. It's something that I can really identify. I mean, I'm a fifth generation immigrant. My father didn't graduate from the sixth grade. I put myself through architecture school running restaurants and bars. I'm hardly pedigreed. My degree is not in what I actually do today. And throughout my career, I was the person that was willing to take on the hard thing, the job that usually other people didn't want to do. And that really helped me. And in many instances, the job that I went for didn't even exist. I saw a problem, and I put myself out there because I wanted to address it and I wanted to fix it. And I had the good fortune of having folks take a chance on me. And in more than one occasion, I was referred to as kind of the wild card candidate for a job. And that somewhat motivated me. So I would say, as an example of that, today I'm a CMO of a $2 billion company. And I'm not your conventional CMO. You know, I grew up as a salesperson and in operations and came into marketing fairly late into my career because someone saw something in me and took a chance on me. And I later developed the skill set. So I would say pushing boundaries and changing rules, it's just about what you're willing to be defined by. And in my instance, you know, what defined me was the fact that I just wasn't conventional and I wasn't traditional. Instead of letting that hold me back, it actually set me apart.
Ask you all, according to a recent Reuters study, a third of tech executives report having no women at all in leadership positions at their companies, and 56% of women in technology report leaving at sort of the high point of their career for a whole variety of reasons that obviously I know you all have probably experienced firsthand. What is the hurdle to getting women in leadership roles in technologies? Why are women making these decisions not to stick around? And you know, what kind of culture should we be sort of promoting to make sure women join the highest echelons of technology?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. You know, Amy and I were talking on the way up here, and we've been exchanging text messages this morning, and Amy runs our HR function at Rackspace. And I think it's really holding our own selves accountable to making sure that we're elevating talent and giving them the opportunity to really blossom. But I think there's another component too, which is the pipeline is drying up on us. So if you look at the statistics in terms of young women that are pursuing STEM fields of education, it's actually going in the wrong direction. That's one. I also think there's an assumption that if you're not technical, that you can't enter the field of tech, which, let me tell you, I did not know what a hard drive was when I started working at Dell 17 years ago. And when I came over to Rackspace, I barely understood how the cloud worked. So I think that there's a misconception, too, that holds women back. And then I also think the third piece is, you know, your point that you touched on, which is when women are deciding to become mothers, how we actually help them make that transition and how we help them and enable that transition back into the workplace is of paramount importance in terms of retaining top female talent.
Right. That's a complicated notion when you have a lot of ping pong tables in your office environment. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think what I would add is two other considerations. I think the first would be communication is lacking. And that seems strange because women like to communicate and we sometimes like to over-communicate. But the reality is women communicate to each other. Women communicate to individuals that they are comfortable with. Women do not communicate often to their bosses or their leadership. And to me, that's still highly problematic. I see it consistently. I can't tell you how many times I deal with people on my team who have emotional breakdowns because they never shared with me, right, their issues, their concerns, their challenges of balancing their work life and their personal life, the issues that they're facing. I promise you, men do not have these problems. If they have a problem, they'll tell you. They want something, they'll tell you. They want to get something done, they will tell you. There is no lacking of their ability to tell you what it is that they want. But women often suffer in silence, or they'll share with a group of people who cannot do anything about it. There is a way that you have to address and your concerns and communicate. Absolutely. Get advice on how to do that with your leadership. Understand who your leadership is. We all acknowledge that everyone is not always sympathetic, compassionate, fair, or understanding, and sometimes selfish and only concerned about their bottom line. Nonetheless, they need to be successful, and they can't be successful without you. So they do have a vested interest to listen to your concerns. And so oftentimes, I feel like women just decide. They decide, I can't do this anymore. I can't manage my life anymore. I can't do these kids and this anymore. They just decide, and then they quit. And at that point, it's almost too late to change that train into a different direction. But what I have found is if you can have an open dialogue, or if you have the courage to go have the communication and say, hey, I'm struggling with this, I'm challenged with this, I have these boundaries or these rules, you'd be surprised at how many people will accommodate that and will figure out how to help you be successful because they understand your value to their program or to their project or to the success of their company. And so I encourage the women in this room to be communicative. I think it's extremely important. The other thing that I have as a key function of my belief system and something that I highly push within my company as my own personal code of ethics, personal beliefs, rules of engagement, is I think women need to identify boundaries. Sometimes we take on jobs that are not ours. We take on roles that are not ours. We take on other people's responsibilities that are not ours. And I think it's important that you understand your boundaries, your role, and your responsibilities. Because sometimes we take ourselves to the nth degree and it wasn't necessary to do so. And that's been the biggest challenge I've had in my career. I like to do everything. I want to be right. I like to control my world. I am a control freak. And I know this. As a result, sometimes I always believe it has to be me. I'm the only one who can do it, and I can do it better than everyone else. That is a fallacy and an arrogant belief. It is important to trust people to delegate and to set your boundaries. And so sometimes, yes, people will not like that. I just came off a vacation for 2 weeks. My client wasn't too happy about it, but I was like, I'm going on vacation. It was necessary for me. They didn't realize they needed me to go on vacation because I might have been hostile if I had not. But the reality is that sometimes we have to set our boundaries and we can't feel guilt about it and we just got to move on. And so I think it's important to do that. I tell the women that work for me, if you have these days that your kids have to be here on these days at these times, then so be it. Leave, right? Don't apologize. Don't look guilty because then that allows other people to make you feel guilty and act like somehow you're not performing your job. And that is simply not true, right? And so it's important that we set those boundaries and understand what they are. And I think that what happens is when we get to those senior levels, the pressure becomes a lot. We overwhelm ourselves. We overwhelm our minds. And then we're just like, okay, I can't do this and I gotta go, right? And I just think that's not true. I think there are a lot of opportunities to figure out what's the right situation and the right balance for you. And if that company is not the kind of company that can do that, go find one that can.
Gina, I want to ask you about recruiting and hiring in particular. You know, we had some developers on our team who said, look, when you look at the marketplace, when you look at job descriptions, these tech job descriptions are clearly written for men. I mean, even the language they use, they all but say the word bro. Like, you know, how do you, when you are trying to fill these jobs, how do you negotiate salaries? How do you negotiate job titles, job descriptions, hierarchy in a way that sort of promotes women? And do you feel like they're given offers that are sort of secondary? Do you feel like they're given, you know, offers that are not for as much pay as men? How do you help balance that?
That's an excellent question. I am deeply immersed in the research on all of these issues. There is a lot showing that job descriptions are written in ways that sort of activate very subtle stereotypes about who belongs and who doesn't. And I would like to highlight, actually, there are amazing women entrepreneurs who are really pushing boundaries in this area. For example, Kieran Snyder founded a company called Textio. She has a PhD in linguistics, and she is assessing languages in job descriptions and performance reviews for subtle bias and then offering gender-neutral suggestions to replace them. The latest findings that they have come out with shows that when you use growth mindset language, this is a very popular topic, encourage you to look into it, that basically focuses on a love of learning or uses words like strive, that is more inclined to draw in more women applicants. When it comes to the salary issue, that's huge. Hopefully you all know and celebrate the law that was recently passed in Massachusetts forbidding employers from asking for your salary history. That is a huge win for women, because with the gender pay gap, if you are being set your pay rate on the basis of what you were making instead of what you are worth doing that job and what the market rate is, you are going to continue to be underpaid throughout your entire career. So when we have, you know, continuing to have these kinds of regulations, I think that's the best thing that can happen. For companies themselves, you've got folks who are leading the way on making sure that their own companies have equitable pay for people who are doing the same job. The Salesforce, for example, just did a huge assessment and made corrections to make sure that that was the case. And then I suppose finally, to kind of pick up from the most recent conversation, I think it's very important to highlight that in my estimation, based on what I see in all of the research, overwhelmingly, it's not that women are the problem or that women need to change something about the way that they're doing things. A 1% bias towards men at the lowest levels of an organization will result in only about a quarter of women at the echelons of leadership in that same org. So really, that 1%, you know, that's a huge difference at the end of the day. You have always, you are always, as a woman, trying to walk a very fine balance, because leadership is perceived as a combination of competence and likability. And if you are a woman who displays competence, you're often perceived as unlikable. And if you're a woman who is warm and portrays kindness and likability, then you are perceived as not competent. So it's very difficult to win by only focusing on how can I change my words? How can I make sure not to say I'm sorry? How can I be firm but not a B word, right? Like, it's, you are just walking that tightrope. And I am convinced that the solution to these things is going to be on paying attention to the research that's out there. There's a wonderful book that just came out by Iris Bonet talking about gender equity by design. It's very small ways that companies can ensure that they don't have any bias in things like advancement, right, or assessment, where women receive more negative feedback and men receive more specific constructive feedback in their performance reviews, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want to say that I feel like there's great things we can, you know, we can all lean in and these kind of things and support one another. It's wonderful. But it's going to take more than that to truly level the playing field.
If you all are talking to women who are seeking careers in technology, obviously there's all kinds of sort of positive advice you can give them. Where are moments in your own careers where you maybe have stumbled, where you haven't stepped up when you should have stepped up, or haven't pushed a boundary when you should have pushed a boundary? What are, you know, sort of the pitfalls you would tell folks to avoid? Carla?
That's a great question. Man, I was thinking every day, if I'm being honest. You know, I think it's something that we constantly have to challenge ourselves on. You know, I think I'll use an example in a prior role that I had. And it was an interesting dynamic in that I had worked in an organization. It was where I started my career at a very low-level job. And then a decade later, I came back to that same organization at a much higher level. And many of the people that I used to work with were still at the same level. And it was a really strange dynamic in that they still viewed me as that 26-year-old and not the person that had come back with 10 years plus experience. And when I started to have a point of view or expressed a point of view or had a strong opinion about something, I was immediately told that that was not my place or that I was being too bold and that I needed to bring people along. And it was a fine line because on one hand, you don't want to not listen to the feedback. You want to make sure that you're really taking it in and aware of the context and dynamic in which you're operating. But on the other hand, to your point, you can get inside your own head and it can take you down. So I think that was a moment in my career where I decided that feedback is a gift, but you can also choose what you do with it. And you can choose what you're going to listen to and what you're not going to listen to. And so long as you are clear on your intent, and I have like these little mantras I tell myself, and one of them is my intent is pure. So long as you're clear on your intent, it doesn't really matter what others think. And that is something that I have adopted. Sometimes it serves me, sometimes it doesn't. But I think, you know, for me, that's something that I've had to do over time. And as you grow in your career, you become a bigger target for that sort of feedback. And you just have to, you have to pick and choose what you're going to take and adopt, but you have to stay true to yourself.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have a very similar experience. As was mentioned, Recruiter is no longer in business. We've joined the 8 in 10 businesses that close within our first year, so we're in good company. But when I look back at my experience working on the business, I recognized that there were a number of times where I felt that I almost deferred certain decisions to other people who had more experience, even though I didn't feel totally confident with that direction. I was perhaps leaning in a different direction. And so when I reflect back on it, I really feel like I have learned that I should trust myself, right? Maybe that other person across the table, you know, who has a different opinion has been doing this for much longer, but I know what I'm about, right? And I have the feeling that I have about where we need to go, what we need to do for a reason. And so I owe it to myself to really have my own back.
Honor yourself.
Yeah, to honor myself, absolutely.
You know, I think I would probably indicate two things. I think in terms of a time when I might have failed, you know, I fail often. Right. If you do anything right, you should be failing. Right. Like if you're not failing, then you're not taking enough risk. So there's always going to be those times that you make a decision and it was the wrong decision, or you went for a specific role and it just wasn't the role you thought it was going to be. And it's painful. I'm not going to lie to you. But in any situation, you learn from it. And so I think as long as you have the right attitude and perspective about it, you can learn from any situation and it will serve you well. I kind of have the opposite situation in that, you know, I'm a big believer that you need to self-assess who you are and you need to understand your strengths. I'm a big fan of strengths. It's something that we follow in my company quite recently, but even before that, I had adopted that concept that you need to know your strengths, and you focus on your strengths and you minimize your weaknesses. This has been a lot of time focused on weaknesses that are never just going to be strong. I know where I could do well, and I know what I don't do well. And so I tried to build my team with that in consideration. One of my strengths is that I am extremely confident. I am. I'm sure y'all are shocked in this room. And in the same token, sometimes that can be a weakness in the sense that you can come off overconfident, or and to the earlier point, women are often seen as confident, as arrogant, or all of these various adjectives. And I had to learn very quickly not to allow other people's perspectives determine who I am and decide how I was going to proceed, and or knock that confidence. Because that's what it does.
Right.
It chips away at your confidence. So not all feedback is purposeful or meaningful or even well-intentioned. And so you have to be able to distinguish between that feedback to understand where that is. Now, that being said, I have learned as I moved up through the career and as you continue to go up in the leadership world that there are times to speak and there are times to be silent. There are times to phrase what you say, how you say it, and when you say it. And that was hard for me because I'm an extremely direct person and I like to be heard and I feel like I should always share everything I think with everyone. And so it has been a challenge for me to recognize that sometimes that does not have the desired result so that I can still be myself, I can still offer up my opinion, but there is a way to do that and there's a time to do that and I'm still learning that. And so it's that balance of recognizing your strengths but also recognizing those strengths, right, need to be tempered given the situation so that you have maximum benefit to the goal that you're trying to achieve.
What is the benefit to the tech industry of greater involvement, greater professional, you know, positions for women? I mean, what companies do you see that have really been sort of changed by women's leadership, and what do you think they're bringing to the table?
Well, I'll start. I mean, the lead of our North America organization at Accenture is a woman. She was recently appointed, I think, last year. And it's been very interesting to see this shift. Again, my company is very large, but overall, we have the percentage of women is still small in comparison. We have a large number that usually come in at entry level, but at the end of the day, the percentage at the leadership level is much smaller. And so it was a very bold move to see this change. Everybody was kind of like, oh, what's happening here? And immediately, people started assessing her background. Well, is she qualified? She's a lawyer. What does she know about IT? It was very interesting to hear the feedback and the commentary. But what I think she's really brought to the table and what I've seen is just change. Sometimes for an organization to make it in this place, you need change, right? I can tell you that, someone was speaking in one of the Hulu, the first person that spoke this morning, and she was saying, I was in this business before you had all of these other Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, right? The reality is these entities got there because of people who thought outside the box. Uber got there because of people who thought outside the box. People who have disrupted the various industries that we've seen out there, which there's been a lot of disruption. If you go back and assess a lot of them, they had innovators, people who thought outside the box, exactly like how you are. And what I think women bring to the table is outside the box thinking. And I think it's essential. It has been proven statistically that companies who have women on the board and women in leadership are more profitable. Who doesn't want to be more profitable, right? Like, I don't really understand. And so I understand that sometimes people get scared. They like their fiefdoms and their control and what they have. But the reality is, the more you diversify an organization with qualified people, right? We're not talking about putting a person in position just because of their gender. We always believe in equality. But I do think when you allow them to come into these positions, companies see change. We just went through a major geographic change. We're having other changes. And I think they're going to be very valuable and help us to be that much more successful. And I think we've seen that consistently across the market. And so I think it's necessary for us to be at the table.
Carla, what do you think women bring to the table at Rackspace?
Well, I'll share a little story. So the person I work for, who's a man, said to me one day, we were just riding in a cab on a way to a customer visit, and he said, you know, Carla, when a woman is good, she's really good. And it just meant so much to me that he said that. And he was talking to me just about the people he's been exposed to throughout his career. He said, to get to this point, you have to be really good. And that just really resonated with me. And I totally agree with what you're saying in terms of what women bring to the table. But I think all types of diversity. As a marketer, I want to make sure that we look like our customers. I want to make sure that we personify them in every sense. Now, I feel really fortunate that I work for a company that embraces diversity in every sense of the word. I mean, Rackspace, one of the coolest things when I walked in the door, we do a training called Rookie O, where you train, regardless of your level of the company, you train with everybody on their first day of work. And I walked into that room, and it was like a feast for the eyes. It was so diverse. And I was like, this is awesome. Now, granted, that starts to thin out as you move to the top, exactly what we see in tech and in the corporate world. So we've got some work to do. But I think that diversity of youth an age, you know, diversity of gender, diversity of race, diversity of education, a diversity of background, and all sense of the word, senses of the word are enrich not just your culture, but your strategies. That's where innovation is born. And so it's something that I'm a huge promoter of. And one of the things I joke about, I always say that I like to form Wizard of Oz teams. So I consider myself Dorothy, and I always have my heart and my courage and my tin man. You know, like I like to build people that are really different and pull them together on a team. And sometimes it's a bit of a social experiment. But I think, you know, that's something that really energizes me, especially once they start to gel. And the ideas that are born out of those sorts of teams are usually unlike anything that's come before. So that's just what I would say in terms of the environment that I work in today and the environment that I try to promote in my own work.
Gina, who's doing it best? I mean, what are the companies out there, both nationally and locally, where you think women are being given some of the greatest opportunities in technology or where the culture fits?
Yeah, I really want to highlight the small companies that are being led by women. I think that is where the future is. Changing a massive organization is a very heavy lift, and bravo, there are a lot of companies who are committed to doing it, but it's going to be slow. And so there is such wonderful opportunity for those new small companies, women-led companies, to really blaze forward. I mentioned Textio is one of those. My friend Mary Chauvin lives here in Austin. She is raising money for her company called Penny Parental, which basically offers an insurance policy for companies who want to provide parental leave to their employees but otherwise couldn't afford it. There's a woman named Ursula Mead who has a company called In Her Sight. They're basically Glassdoor for women. So how do you feel about the company where you're working? Is the kind of place where women are going to be supported? There's a woman who her name is Stephanie Lampkin, who has launched a company called Blendor that's devoted to recruiting, actually. It matches people in a way that helps to eliminate the unconscious bias that comes from hearing an ethnic-sounding name, for example. So I feel like women, you know, to your point, Tamara, women are pushing those boundaries. Women are thinking outside of the box. And actually, to your point, women are also, you know, raising their hand to say, hey, you overlooked us, right? So one of my favorite anecdotes is a number of years ago when Apple first launched their health app, you could track your sleep, you could track your sodium intake. If you're a woman, you couldn't track your cycle. So, like, talk about a huge fail, right, when it comes to connecting with your consumer base. So I feel like you have both, right? When women are involved and they're at leadership levels, you have both.
Well, I want those of you in the audience to start thinking about your questions because we're going to open it up pretty soon. But I want to ask each of you, what can tech companies do to better support women, to ensure equal treatment, equal pay, equal opportunity? You know, how do we increase the volume of women's voices in tech companies around the nation?
Starts with really taking a look at what we're doing to contribute to the pipeline and making sure that we are really developing young women that see this as a viable industry that they want to go into and they have interest in, and recognizing the diversity of function that exists within the tech industry and that they can pursue just about any type of work that they want to within that field. That for me is a big component of it to start with, because if that's drying up on us, then we're going to have a long-term problem.
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think one is investment. I mean, I think my company is very focused on expanding women in a workplace, and we've seen that, right? In the last 4 years, we've gone 4% in the leadership levels for women. And investment requires pipeline, and I am absolutely in agreement with you. You don't just put someone and pluck them up from the low level and put them in leadership. It doesn't work that way. So you have to have pipeline from the earliest point all the way through. So entry-level recruiting is important. And then at every phase through their career path, making sure that you have leadership development programs at every point to make sure that they stay through. And I think the second is accountability. Last year, we published our diversity numbers. It was a big deal. It was a big deal in the technology field when we did that. And a lot of other companies called our diversity group and was like, why did you do that? right? Because then they feel pressure to do the same, right? But it was important to do so. We published our diversity numbers by gender as well as race. We did it for all levels. And I think it shocked a lot of people, both on the street as well within our company. And it was important because if we are saying that we're serious about changing the mix and we're talking about changing the culture, we have a practice slogan within my group called Changing the Face of the Practice. If we're going to do that, you can't do that if there's no accountability. And there's no accountability if there's no numbers, right? Because people can say they're making change, but reality is if their numbers are the same or going down, I don't understand what change is happening. So I think, you know, again, investment in the pipeline and accountability are the two ways that we have to help companies recognize their responsibility in inciting change.
Yeah, definitely agree with and echo that. Take a slightly different tack. It's shown that women feel equally as capable to men to rise into the highest levels, but they're not that excited about it compared to men, right? And we have a lot of reasons that we understand why that's the case. We do a lot of work at home, acknowledging and recognizing that all women's lives look different, women's families look different. Nevertheless, it is very much the case that women continue to do more work at home than their male partners. Women are doing more work at home and spending more time with their children now than they were in the 50s, right? When we didn't have the same kind of expectations for women's lives as we do today. So to me, I think a key piece that some folks are talking about, Anne-Marie Slaughter has written about this, is that we need to also empower men to take on non-traditional roles, to pitch in more at home, to be basically the supporting spouse or partner and putting their, you know, wife or partner's career first. So we have to not only encourage ourselves to go ahead and move into that role, but also find ways that the other people in our life, particularly the men in our lives, can continue to support that.
Well, if you've got questions, please line up at the microphones and we would be thrilled to take them. Yes, ma'am.
Can I go ahead and...
Yes, go
All
for
right.
it.
Hi, I'm Tara Ossie. I actually was here last year, and I saw you on a panel, Tamara, last year. You gave me excellent advice. And I am a board-level reliability engineer. I also do packaging design for NXP Semiconductors, which was Freescale. And as I came into that role straight out of college, as you can see from what I'm wearing, I felt in order to be respected, I had to take away a lot of the fun things that I liked about being a girl. I felt like I couldn't wear makeup. I felt like I couldn't wear heels. I felt like I couldn't dress nicely or do my hair because I wasn't respected. I was looked at as too effeminate and not competent. So in order to be taken seriously in a technical role, I had to really get rid of a lot of that. Do you guys have good advice about retaining that part of your life and maybe some good experiences that you had?
Yeah, I can talk about this for sure. So let me preface this by saying that my father is a stylist and image consultant. From the moment that I was very little, it was kind of beat into me that you dress the part. Now, that being said, I went to architecture school, and during that time, my style became very androgynous. So I was one of four girls in my class. And I cut off all my hair, I started wearing my glasses. My style of dress became very kind of like J. Crew male, and it wasn't even by design, it wasn't intentional. It was, I mean, maybe a little bit of it was dressing the part. I was hearing my father's voice in the back of my head, but I was losing myself and I didn't even realize it. And it wasn't until I went home for summer break that my friends were like, "What happened to you?" So then fast forward, once I changed careers and moved into a new career, I began to embrace myself and my own style again. And I started to get feedback that I was a little too funky for the corporate world and that it wasn't really befitting of an executive. But I think going back to what I said earlier about really taking what's meaningful from feedback and applying it to yourself and also recognizing that being your whole self is super important. Feeling comfortable and good about yourself exudes so much more than just trying to pretend to be something that you're not, is critical. So I would say embrace yourself. Bring your full self to work. Enjoy what you wear because you're going to exude that confidence and happiness. And at the end of the day, people want to be around someone who's fun to be around and who feels good versus someone who looks like them.
Thanks. I think the only other thing I would tell you is you don't want to give people power over you.
Mm.
And I think that at the end of the day, authenticity is the most important thing that you have in your life, and you should allow no one to steal it from you. Now, that being said, right, you always have to evaluate the environment that you're in, and you have to recognize that people judge you for that environment. And so you have to find a balance of being who you are and how you need to dress to satisfy yourself within the bounds and the construction of the environment that you're in. And there's a balance between the two, and you got to find that balance. It isn't being completely non-yourself. It doesn't mean you need to stop wearing makeup. It doesn't mean you need to not do your hair. I would tell you to wear your makeup if you want to wear it and do your hair if you want to do it, right? But in terms of your attire, find that balance of something that's feminine that makes you feel happy, but at the same time doesn't take away from their focus of who you are and what you bring to the table, right? So, and there is a way to find that balance, right? And so if like your father is a stylist, find someone who can do it for you, because it's not always as easy as we say, and we're not always naturally inclined to find that balance for us in that workplace, but there are people whose job it is to do that, right? And you'd be surprised at the amount of people out there who can do that for you. And so we need to try and help you find that person who can help you find that balance of who you are and your style, but within the balance of that workplace, because that's reality, right? And so you got to see where that balance is of the both.
If you're looking for inspiration, this woman, Rachel Vail, W-E-I-L, is a tech evangelist at Microsoft, and she has a historical project celebrating feminine women and products in tech. So you could look it up.
What's her last name again?
W-E-I-L.
Okay, thank you. Thank all of you guys.
Hi, thank you so much for doing this panel. I was wondering if each of you could speak a little bit about the role of mentorship and menteeship in your careers.
Yeah, I've been very lucky and honored to have amazing mentors throughout my career, both male and female, although I will say that for me, the women mentors in my career have been extremely valuable. I turn to them and say, I'm in the crisis of, you know, I don't believe in myself. Like, can you cheerlead me, please? And they, you know, don't look down on me, and they give me the pep talk that I need. I think it's incredibly important. I also had a conversation with a woman who was very senior in financial services. I had a chance to ask her about her career because she had been at very, very high levels the entire time. Her name is Sally Krawcheck. She's doing a company called Elevest, which is encouraging women to invest their money because we don't do it at the same rate as men. And I said, how did you do this? Like, I look at your LinkedIn and it's just like there's a C in front of every position you've had. And she said that she found very many white, male, older mentors and sponsors. So definitely, I think, you know, it doesn't matter what that person looks like. If they're there to support and advance and advocate for you, that is so important. It's really going to help you get where you need to go.
Yeah. I would add that mentorships can be symbiotic. So don't assume that you don't have something to offer the person that's mentoring you. I often sought out relationships where I felt like I had something to offer them and vice versa. And I would always leave a one-on-one with, what can I do for you? Here are my strengths. What can I do for you? And I was always surprised and caught off guard by how many people would kind of be aghast that I said that and say, wow, no one's ever asked me that before. So I think that when you seek out a mentorship, just keep that in mind, that you have something to offer as well. And the mentorships for me that have been the longest standing have been the ones where it was symbiotic like that, where we had a mutually beneficial relationship.
Hi, Suzanne Paul. I'm Senior Director of Technology at Qualcomm. I've been in this field for 28 years, and in that time, I've only worked with one other female engineer. I'm an RF hardware designer by trade, and women in that area are very far and few between. But over the course of that, I think I've started to realize more about some of the unique challenges that women face in engineering. And I think there are challenges that are specific to engineering that women in other fields don't have. And one of those, I've been doing some research and have seen that if you look at the average engineering style or the average style of a woman, their thought style, and the average style of a man, those aren't average, are different. Of course, everybody's unique, but there are differences that come out of the averages. And so I think the fact that women bring an inherently different perspective and a different way of working and a different way of thinking is one of the factors that has caused them to not succeed as much as they could in engineering and has also driven them away from entering the pipeline. Yeah. So my question is, the male environment, the male engineering environment is very homogenous, and everybody thinks that the best engineers are exactly like them. How do we get the engineering environment to broaden their view of what constitutes a good engineer?
That's a hard one. It is, because the reality is what is predominant and what in their eyes have seen as successful as predominant is going to be what they stand by. And until they see an incentive or a reason to change, they're not likely to do so. And so I think as women, you know, you have to have that strong question in your mind. Are you ready to challenge that force? And if you do that, then you have to be willing to accept the consequences of challenging that force, right? And you got to pick your battles. And so what I have found is the biggest way to change an environment is to be in a position to do change, which is hard to do if you're not in leadership. And so sometimes you got to decide when you want to go do that battle. If you're entry level and first in a company and you're battling the status quo, right, and you're not in a position to really make change, you got to decide if it's really worth that battle. And I know a lot of people would probably disagree with that advice, but you know, my perspective is there's battles you can win, and then there's battles that you wait to go win, right? And there's ways that you can influence even as you are outside of and in individual relationships with people to bring concepts and thoughts to them versus in the mainstream you know, meetings that you have. The reality is engineering is extremely male-dominated. And most individuals that I know that work in that space, it is very difficult for them. And 9 times out of 10, they leave before they even hit manager. You know, what I have found for them is I'm like, if you're passionate about this work, you got to stick with it and you got to stay in it until you get into a position where you can start to influence some change. And I think it's important that you're passionate. Now, if you're not passionate about the work, you know, I think you have to decide, is that the right place for you to be? There are some engineering companies out there that you're seeing some change in. And going back to your conversation, sometimes you really got to make a decision if that's the company you want to be in. And I really do think it was bold what you said earlier, which is sometimes you make a greater change going to a location where they want to make change versus an organization that doesn't want to make change is not going to get there for another 20 years and only because the environment forced them to.
Yeah, that's a great point. We hosted a conversation recently, actually with the former tech lead at, the former tech lead at Texas Tribune, about the importance of soft skills on engineering teams. This was part of Feminist Hack, which is the community meetup that I run. And I feel I completely agree with what you're saying, and I feel that until the way that a team works together is emphasized and valued as highly as something like the quality of the code, then we're going to continue to face these challenges, right? But I think the companies who are leading understand that teams who work well together and don't have that, frankly, sometimes very toxic environment in engineering are going to outperform their peers.
But you're doing something right if you're a senior director.
Yeah.
Hi, thank you so much. That was a brilliant transition into my comment and question. So I'm a psychologist, and for the last 12, 13 years or so, I've worked primarily in the family arena, coaching families as they go through really tough divorce. And I've had the privilege to work with a lot of folks who are at the senior level in companies, or folks who own their own companies, big businesses here in town. And one of the things I've noticed as I've done this work is that the challenges that they face at home affects the work they do at work. And the challenges they face at work affects what's going on at home. So I've managed to work with these brilliant women in particular who are going up in their career, and then bump comes this wall where things are crashing at home. And then it also causes some kind of slide or at least a standstill in their career for a while. As women, we have a tendency, I think, to think that when compared to men, that we are more emotionally intelligent. The mistake we make is misinterpreting that. Yes, we are more emotionally expressive, but the way we're socialized, we become more expressive that way. As I work with folks and I'm able to encourage them to take a deeper look at emotional intelligence, which you mentioned, the soft skills, which is understanding how to regulate all of that. First, becoming fully aware of who we are, how to manage relationships, how to be flexible, how to make decisions, how to manage risk. All of those have to do with emotional intelligence. And as I work with my clients, I know I've transitioned from working with divorcing folks to working with executives. And the same patterns that I see as I worked with divorcing folks with regards to relationship are the same patterns that are at work in terms of partners working together, business partners, or teams working together. So my question is, considering now that we have the research, we know the data on the impact of emotional intelligence on the bottom line, what are tech companies doing? Because a lot of my clients over the last 10 years have been in the tech sector. What are these companies doing to work on these soft skills, to support their clients, to manage relationships at home and at work, improve the bottom line, but helping folks to live the life that they really want to live?
I have an example at Rackspace. So we're also very focused on strengths. We do all the strengths finder work. But one of the things that really blew me away is that the company offers a strengths finders class for couples. So you can actually bring your spouse to do it. And I have not done it with my husband yet, but he did take the test, and we've kind of compared our results, and I'm already starting to recognize,
yes,
some of the things that could be impeding us, even, you know, having been together for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's something really cool that we do and offer as a benefit. And I think that when you're a company that focuses on strengths, that does drive a certain amount of emotional intelligence. It requires it because people look for it as they're building teams. And they're really thinking in those terms. So they are starting to look more for the softer skills. So that's one example of how I think it's functioning at Rackspace. Could we be doing more? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And I think your work is really interesting in terms of as you rise the family. Boy, don't
yes.
we know it. I mean, I'm just speaking for myself. The family life starts to crumble. Something's
yes.
got to give. So I think it's just really important work. And what you said, I think, is really poignant, which is what are companies doing to help make sure that the home life is not crumbling? Because that's obviously going to impact how you perform at work. I think it's a really poignant comment.
We've only got a couple minutes left, and I just want to power through these. So if you just give a quick question and one person address it really fast, I think we can get through. So yes, ma'am.
Tamara. So I'm glad that you brought up the point about Accenture publishing its stats on diversity, gender, et cetera. This is something that I'm actually pushing. I work at a very large tech company who likes to say they're wonderful for women. But when I go to ask for the stats, I get a lot of hand waving. And I'm trying to start rocking the boat and pushing on it. So I'm wondering, when Accenture published that, did you get, I mean, with that transparency, were more women interested in working at your company? I mean, did you get a positive, like, influx of people wanting to be there that were from these diverse populations?
Yeah, I mean, I think what has actually helped us in terms of more women wanting to work for us lately is not just the stats. I think it's more about the fact we have made a truly concerted effort to push women. And so it has been made a responsibility and accountability at every level. Like, people are getting... let's just say they have to be held accountable to understand how they're promoting women at every level and really evaluating helping women be successful. But what's really helped us the most, believe it or not, is last year we changed our maternity time frame to 4 months.
Nice.
And paternity time frame as well you can take. So it had a huge, like, it's such a strange thing, right? Because it's just this one little change. But that, more than anything, proved to people that they were serious. And that actually attracted a lot more women because it's an important issue for us, right? Mm-hmm. You have a baby, you need time. Mm-hmm. And that, with the amount of vacation that we have a lot of women now that can take up to 5 and 6 months off still paid. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And so that definitely did it. I think the second one is really that we've been really focused on trying to do flexible work life, which is huge. Like, your ability to choose when you're working, what hours, from what locations, and trying to balance that has been extremely helpful for us as well. And that's really what's starting to attract the females at the various levels.
All Okay. If you Thanks. Are still in line and have questions, please come up and we'll these folks will address them. But unfortunately, we have to wrap up. Thank you so much to our panelists, and thanks to all of you for attending.